Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, again, we're joined by my special guest, Mac Lancaster. Hello, Mac.
Hello, Dr. Anbar. It's great to be back again.
It's great to have you back. So last week, we had a really cool discussion about how you sort of figured out what career path you want to take early in your life. And I thought we'd turn the tables around. You can interview me, maybe. But basically, I want to talk to you about how I chose my career path with the hope that our listeners can gain some insight into this process. So I'll let you go, Mac.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you if you would like to start by just talking about the journey to how you got here now. The steps that you took to get through med school, maybe even the decision-making process to go to med school?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, some people who go to medical school, they plan their whole lives around it. And for me, it was sort of a late decision, which shows you that there are many routes to get to many different careers, including medicine. In fact, I still went to medical school directly after college, as we'll discuss, but many people now go to professional school after experiencing quote-unquote real life for 2 or 3 years, and like medical schools actually value that because people come in with more wisdom and life knowledge that they can apply to medicine as it starts. But for me, if I go way back, I remember when I was 10 years old, I wanted to become an astronomer because I like the sky, and I realized after all it involves a lot of physics and math, and that didn't thrill me as much, although I was pretty good at math. But going to college, I had absolutely no idea what career I'd be interested in, much like you. I went to a four-year school. I went to UCSD. We share an alma mater, although you went to community college first for a couple of years. I came in, and the school had general education classes for the first 2 years, which I think is a really good idea. And I would counsel high school kids who are thinking of careers not to pigeon yourself into a particular career early on, because that will limit your experiences, if you would. And even if you, let's say you want to go to medicine, and you know that from the time you're 5 years old, if you just limit to learning about subject matters you think relate to medicine, like biology and chemistry, science, and stuff like that, and you don't study the arts or you don't study social science, you won't be as complete a human being, and you won't relate, for example, with your patients as well, because you won't have a varied background. And also, as many people discover, what you think the career you might want to go into may change over time. And so if you restrict yourself into, let's say, focusing on medicine as an example, then you don't open yourself up to learning about other careers. So in my college at UCSD, we were all required to take science classes and math classes and social science and arts. And I went through that. I did have to start I didn't have to start with a major. I picked a major of psychology early on because I like how people think. But I found that to be really easy. For myself, it seemed pretty commonsensical. So then I said, well, let me do it by a major in biology as well. That seems like hard science. And that's sort of how I went through the college years, not planning to go into medicine. In fact, when I thought about medicine, I didn't like it for two reasons. One is there's a lot of blood and gore involved. And the second reason was that the pre-meds I knew were very intense individuals that I did not identify with them. In fact, one of the tips I give people is when you pick a career, find a career in which you can match yourself with other people in that career who seem happy in that career.
It's a great piece of advice.
Yeah, I think that works. But if I'd follow that advice fully, I would really not have considered, well, I didn't consider medicine. I actually didn't think it was for me. So after my first 2 years, I got also involved in journalism at the school. I still didn't know what I wanted to do. So I thought, maybe I'll go for 5 years to school because I was having fun, and tuition was not an issue back then. When I started UCSD, tuition was $200 a quarter.
Wow.
1975. So things have changed a bit.
Yeah, that's fact, quite a drastic change.
Yeah, I actually paid for my own tuition. It was not hard. It was a little job.
Well, that's the way it should be. I mean, it should be feasible.
The minimum wage back then was something like $2 an hour, just to contrast. And a house cost $50,000. You know, and a nice car would be $4,000 or $5,000. Nice, really nice car.
Wow,
that's inflation for you. But anyway, I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I'll go for 5 years. I was going to triple major. I'd do an economics major as well. And I was very involved in the school newspaper, and I was going to be editor-in-chief. I wanted to be editor-in-chief of the paper as a senior. But late in my junior year, we had elections for the editor-in-chief position, and I lost.
Oh.
And, yeah, well, that's all right. As we've learned... When things don't turn out, when one door closes, another opens.
Yep, it all happens for a reason.
That's right. And that, you know, that happened in your life, too. Things didn't work out the way you wanted to, and then things turned out even better.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, which is why I think it's important to balance your expectations when you go into things that you could get rejected by, because you seek your sights on something and you really see yourself in it, which is great for motivation, but... You don't want to put your expectations so high that when it doesn't work out, you're going to be completely crushed, right? Because you want to be able to look around and still dust yourself off and see what you can do next.
Right. You want to have goals, but go in with the idea that if you don't meet your goal, there'll be another goal or there'll be something else to do. So
exactly.
Just be flexible. Right, right. So,
what happened after that?
Well, I lost election, and I then was in a sour mood for some reason, and I was looking at my fifth year proposed schedule, mostly economics classes. I said, I don't want to do that. I want to finish in 4 years. But then I said, what am I going to do? So I picked up a phone and called a friend. Phone a friend, good advice. And he said, why don't you go into medicine? You know, you've got a biology major, a psychology major, you like people, you'd be good at it. And I said, yuck, blood and gore, and I don't like pre-meds.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you could get used to it. And I thought about it. And I remembered, after my freshman year, I worked for a summer with squirrel monkeys. And I don't know if you've ever seen squirrel monkeys. But squirrel monkeys are these little creatures that smell really bad. And we were actually checking whether microwave radiation affects pregnant monkeys, because the microwaves had just come out. We wanted to make sure they were safe.
Oh, interesting.
And when I first started... In the summer, the smell was really bad. But in the summer, I could hardly smell them at all because I'd become desensitized to the smell.
Yeah, you eventually habituated to the process and the smell. That's funny.
Exactly. And I remember that.
Your capabilities, yeah.
Well, I remembered it during my conversation with my friend. Yeah, I did get used to it. Oh, I guess I could get used to the blood and gore. Okay, good. I'll go to medical school. And that was the decision.
That's funny that's all it took, really, was just that one thought.
Say it one more time?
Oh, that's funny that's all it took was just that one thought, that you're capable of handling it just by getting used to it.
Yes. And
yeah, so what other obstacles were there along the way that you encountered when it came to medicine?
Well, I should preface what I just said is, in my life, I have made many major decisions on a quote-unquote spur of the moment. and I've gotten away with it, and things have turned out well. And I guess my philosophy is that once you make a decision, if you make the best of it, it usually turns out well. As the story unfolds, you see that how that works. So some people will spend months and months and years trying to figure out what the right decision is. And the ironic thing about it is that like you make a right decision today, but next month it might not be the right decision anymore because you live changed, the circumstances have changed. So I think spending a lot of time trying to figure out what the exact right decision is a waste of time, in my opinion. So I'll just go. I'll make the decision what I have. All right,
that's so really interesting. Yeah. So I also wanted to ask, just based on that, do you think that if you were to have heard go into law, you would have done that just as easily? Or were you set on science?
Okay, so I'm having a bit of trouble hearing you, so repeat yourself one more time.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, so if your friend were to have called you up and said, maybe consider being a lawyer, would you have considered that avenue, or were you really set on science, or were you just open to anything?
I would have considered it. No, I wasn't just set on science. I was thinking of an economics major, and I thought law was a possibility. If he had asked me about it, would he have pushed me towards that? That's interesting. You asked me to go back into my shoes of 40 years ago. more than that. Almost 45 years ago. I think I would have thought about it, but I guess my concern would have been I'd want to shape it in a way I could deal with people because I knew I liked people. Mm-hmm. But I guess law can be that way, you know, especially if you do like guardianship law or stuff that, if I'd known about it at the time. I think my concept of the law at the time was more like being in the library all the time, writing briefs, and I don't think I would have liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, a circumstance can change your life. You know, somebody can nudge you in one way or the other. That actually happened to me when I was applying, skipping ahead a few years, when I was applying to residency after my training in medicine, and I was going to become a pediatrician. As I was applying to different places, I met this guy at the courtyard in front of the hospital at University of Chicago, and he said, "Well, are you applying to residency?" And I named a bunch of schools. I was applying to one school in each of the major cities on the East Coast at the time. He said, "What about Mass General in Boston?" I said, "Oh, I already applied to Boston Children's Hospital." And he said, "Well, you know, they have very nice uniforms to give to healthcare." And I said, "Oh, all right, I'll apply there." And that's where I ended up going.
Wow, just like that. So, yeah, yet another life decision. And I think what that is really demonstrating is, like I said, you need to have balanced expectations, but it's also about adaptability.
Yep, exactly. So,
let's go back to the conversation of any obstacles that you may have encountered on the way.
Yeah, so the first step, once I decided to go to medical school, is I knew the MCATs were coming up, the Medical College Admission Tests, because all my pre-med acquaintances were studying hard, so I went to the pre-med office to sign up for the MCATs, and the secretary looked at me as if I had three eyes. "You're signing up for them now? They're in 3 weeks." Well, I just decided that medicine is just the thing for me. And she said, "Medicine is not just the thing for anyone."
Yeah, that's not something anyone just jumps straight into.
And she told me later, she thought I was quite arrogant, and I just made a decision. So I signed up for an MCAT, and I studied for a whole week during spring break. Mind you, my friends were studying for months and years. Took the MCATs and did pretty well enough that I didn't have to retake them, and it got me into a really good medical school.
Okay, so how did you do that? What do you remember your study process? What did you do to do that? That seems miraculous.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, MCATs, like the SATs or the ACTs, test general knowledge in many areas. So I probably took out my biology book and my biochemistry book and my statistics books and just read some of it over. But, you know, there's a massive amount of knowledge.
Yeah.
A week is not very long.
No, specific knowledge, too, like about it, like just tiny pathways in our cells.
Yeah, but, you know, you can study a million, let's say you can study 1,000 facts and only 3 of them will appear on the test. So unless you study those 3, the rest of the study doesn't help you that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I was lackadaisical enough that the night before the MCATs, I went to the San Diego Padres baseball game. Because I figured they're either going to pass or fail. It doesn't really matter. One more night's not going to make or break.
Exactly, yeah. Might as well enjoy your night. Now, that probably had a better effect on you the next day than actually studying would have.
I think so. If I'd come tired, that would not have been as good.
No.
And I was a good student tonight. So, and the beautiful thing about not knowing I was going to go to medical school is I never worried about grades for the first 3 years. It didn't matter.
Wow, that's funny.
My senior year, I worried about grades because,
By that point, then you have the perspective.
Yeah. The next hurdle I came across was the pre-med committee. They interviewed all prospective medical school applicants, and they wrote a letter of recommendation on your behalf. And I this is now 3 weeks after I decided to go into medicine. So I'm having this interview. And the chairman of the committee, who is my former organic chemistry teacher, also he was then become the provost of the college, he says to me, "My father is a doctor. He's very unhappy. Why do you think you'll do well in this field of medicine?" And
that's quite the question.
I don't. What's that?
That's quite the question.
Yes, and I don't recall my answer. I know what I should have said. I should have said, "My father is a chemist. And he's very unhappy." this is why I don't want to go into chemistry, but something like that. But I didn't say that. I don't remember what I said. But whatever I said. I said as a 20-year-old who hadn't really thought about it much because it's only been 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, after I had the conversation with my friend and I said I'll go to medical school, I called my parents and said, "I decided to go to medical school. If you want to find out more, call me back." Because in those days, you had to pay 10 cents every minute you talked long distance. I didn't want to waste money.
That balances out the cost of college.
There you go. So that they wrote a letter on my behalf that later turned out to be a difficult part of my medical school admission process. I didn't know that at the time. So I started applying to medical schools, and I applied to the top 8 in the country, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, University of Chicago, I applied to 4 safety schools. The safety schools, in my mind, were like UC Davis, and I don't remember what the... They're still good schools, but I thought I could get in for sure.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. So in those days, it was easier to get into medical school than it is today. Today, so I only applied to 12 schools. I say only, because now people apply to 30 or 40 or 50 schools.
That is crazy. I did not know that people applied to that.
Very competitive, very different. And as the interview season came along, I was interviewed by a lot of schools. The only top school that interviewed me was Harvard, but Yale did, and Stanford did, and Chicago did. They all interviewed me. And none of my safety schools interviewed me.
That's
and
funny.
UCSC did not interview me.
Wow.
And I saw my classmates going through, including ones I knew were worse students than I was. And so I decided to walk into the admissions office for the UCSD School of Medicine and ask, why did you interview me?
You demanded an interview.
And they pulled out my file, and they said, "Oh, it's because you did not take science as a freshman." And I said, "I didn't take any classes as a freshman. I came in with sophomore standing because I had enough community college and AP credit." They said, "Oh, we'll interview you." Thank you.
Okay.
And I wonder how many of my other safety schools made the same kind of cut. I mean, the medical schools don't care. They have so many applicants. They can do whatever criteria they want. And that also tells you some of the luck. People apply, they want a certain university, a certain school, and they don't get in. And they think it's because I'm not good. No, it's because these stupid, silly cut that they didn't look at you. It has nothing to do with you.
And I think it also brings up an interesting and really useful point that you need to advocate for yourself when it comes to positions that you want. And if you feel like, oh man, they're not going to listen to me, I should just not say anything, then you're setting yourself up for failure. It's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. But if you go in there just advocating for yourself and your needs and asking what's up, then, you know, I would say that at least half the time you're going to get an answer from someone. It's really important. That's something I've learned throughout this process of applying to grad schools.
I think that's really important. You're right. You do need to advocate. Nobody else will do it for you.
No, it's never going to happen for you. And if you just wait around, then, yeah, you're going to lose out on opportunities.
Exactly. So
very cool.
The interview process continues.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting into any schools. Some of my classmates are already getting accepted. It's different these days. And I'm not sure why it is that I'm not getting accepted. So my last interview was with Stanford University, and when we return from the break, I'm going to tell you how I learned what my problem was, why I wasn't getting in, while other of my classmates seemed to have an easy time and had a choice of schools to attend. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Welcome back. We're talking with Mac. He's interviewing me about my medical school career, or my medical career, my process of getting into medical school. So I was having trouble being admitted, and when I was interviewing at Stanford, the interviewer, I think, was a medical student or maybe a medical resident, and I asked her, do you know why I'm having trouble getting in? And she said, well, the letter from your pre-med committee says you're a really good student, but they're worried about your commitment to medicine. And I said, oh, well, I had that interview 3 weeks after deciding to go to medical school. Please listen to me now. And don't base it all on this letter. So that's when I figured out why I may have been having trouble. And at that time, I was waitlisted at 4 different schools and didn't know if I would be getting in until it took July 31st, the future Harry Potter's birthday, because this was before he was born, that I was accepted off the waitlist at the University of Chicago. And I said, great, it's a good school. I will go there. And a week later, I got accepted to Stanford University, and I got the pleasure of turning them down because they had turned me down for college, so I thought I didn't even with them.
Turn the tables. Now, that sounds really late in the year compared to where I'm at. I'm expecting to hear from schools within the next month or two, around April to May at the latest. Is that standard for med school, around July?
Well, this is waitlisted, so they told everybody, like, April. So this is coming off the waitlist. They can let you know a week beforehand the waitlist opens up. So I found out July 31st. I think medical school started the first week of September, and I went. And the first thing that happened when I got into medical school, I looked around and I said to myself, oh, no, these are all post-pre-meds. I don't like my classmates.
Yeah, I don't know what you were expecting there.
But I didn't think it through. Actually, what I've learned about myself is I do live for the moment a lot, so I don't really anticipate as – there's things I anticipate, but some things I don't anticipate. So, like, when they happen, like, well, duh, you know, of course, what did you expect? But I did find a few people at the school who resonated with me, and they became my friends, and I still keep in touch with some of them. So that's how I ended up in medicine. Now, that being said, there's another step beyond that is, what am I going to specialize in? And then the process starts over again. Just like in college, I didn't know what field I would go into, but in medicine, am I going to become a surgeon? Am I going to become a pediatrician?
Yeah.
Internist?
So many options, and that takes hours of research, days.
And, you know, the first 2 years of medical school back then were all in classrooms, and so you didn't really get to see many patients. But actually what I did is I volunteered in the emergency department as a first-year medical student, which many of us didn't. Not many people did, but I didn't have much exposure, and I thought I should see patients and stuff. That's actually a fun experience. But I had some female attendings, and when they would give recommendations to the patient would turn to me and say, what do you think, doctor? And I was like, I'm just a medical student. It's kind of sexist. But it was a different time.
Yeah.
So I've always liked kids, and when I was in eighth grade, I actually worked in nursery school for a couple of summers where my mother used to work. So I liked little kids. And I thought about pediatrics, but I didn't want to make a choice based on my feelings.
Yeah.
That being said, I want to tell the audience here that making a choice based on your feelings is a really good idea as long as you use your mind as well. And in fact, if you make a choice without regard to your feelings, I think that would be a bad choice. So make the choice with mind and with heart is what I would recommend. So, but I didn't think about pediatrics. I thought about pediatrics. I really liked surgery. I thought surgery was really cool because there's a problem, you cut it out, and the problem's gone. It's really nice.
Yeah, it makes sense.
As opposed to my concept of psychiatry, my concept of psychiatry, neurology at the time was, well, there's a problem, you can't do much about it, you just temporize. You have a seizure disorder, you have a seizure disorder. That's how I thought about it. You have a mental condition, you have a mental condition. I had no clue at the time that you can actually heal people. That was not something in my circle of understanding.
Yeah, so, way more abstract concept.
Yeah. I really thought about surgery a lot. It was a lot of fun. I remember a rotation I did as a pediatrician already before I was deciding to specialize. Because even once I picked pediatrics, there's, again, choices. Am I going to become a general pediatrician, a pulmonologist, a cardiologist,
my gosh,
a pediatric surgeon? There's all these options. But I remember a surgical rotation where we were on call from, you come in at 5 in the morning and you stay till 5 the following afternoon, so 36 hours later. Then you go home, sleep for 12 hours, and start again. The whole month is like that.
That is so intensive and so terrible for metabolism, might I add. For doctors to be training like that, I would expect better. But I understand that that's just how it has to be based on the requirement of the job.
Well, that's how it used to be. They've changed. They've made laws that pediatric trainees can, or doctor trainees can no longer work, I think, more than 80 hours a week, and can't more than 12 hours in a row. And they made all these, or no, more than 24 hours in a row. 24 hours in a row. So they made all these laws, which, you know, at the time when I was doing every other day call, like I described, the surgeon said, "Well, you're missing half the patients." That was the attitude. And I don't particularly like the new method of training. While it's better for your metabolism and maybe better for learning because you're not as tired, I don't think you don't get to see continuity. You don't get to see patients through. And there's no flexibility. Like if it's one day you want to stay late, we can't. You're not allowed to. So I think it's become too rigid the other direction. But maybe it'll be a happy balance at some point.
Yeah.
So the reason I actually decided against surgery, and I think this is important to keep in mind when you choose a career, is I didn't think I would like the lifestyle. So the surgeon, especially in the first 10 years of a career, needs to be in the hospital at 5 in the morning to get started and needs to work long hours. And I thought there's more to life than just medicine. Kind of ironic for me to think that way because, Mac, you know, today I spent 80 hours a week doing activities around counseling and hypnosis, which is medicine as well. But it's different than being in an OR and being stuck to that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And also, early in life, you know, I wanted a family. I wanted children. You know, right now I can dedicate more time to my career because my children are out of the house. And different time of life. Yeah, so I ruled surgery out. I thought about internal medicine a bit, but one of the other things I thought about is they want to take care of kids who have a whole life in front of them, or would I be satisfied working with, like, in geriatrics, or with adults who are going to have a shorter lifespan? And for me, the feeling, and thank goodness for geriatricians who work well with older individuals, but, you know, if you're in your last year of life, and while I think there's great, a lot of importance to take care of people with dignity and help them out through the last phase of life, for me, at least when I was at that, a young doctor, that didn't seem very satisfying to help somebody for a few months, although I think my attitude now would be somewhat different given how I learned life is so precious. Well,
yeah.
We'll be back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unwar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. I am talking about how I picked my medical career and my subspecialization. And my co-host is Mac Lancaster. I'll throw it up to you for the next question.
Yeah, so I think it's a really good point you mentioned about balancing your career with some sort of life that you actually enjoy. And I wanted to ask you, how do you balance your personal life now versus at the beginning of your career versus maybe at the beginning of college versus maybe even in high school? How has it changed throughout your life?
Good question. And I think balance is important. And the reason balance is important in my mind is that, first of all, if you rest your mind in one activity versus the other, you come back refreshed. And second of all, if one activity you're in is not going well, you have other activities that are going well at the same time. So by focusing on the activities going well, you can maintain an emotional balance. And if you're all focused just on medicine, then if that's not going well, then life is bad. I remember I met an attending early in my medical school career who said he was spending Saturday at the hospital, and then we asked him why. He said, what else is there to do? And I thought, that's not a very balanced life. So balance in my life, as a teenager, between school and keeping statistics for the baseball team and writing stories, I think that was the triad that I was involved in then. In college, I already mentioned the majors in biology and psychology and working with journalism and getting involved with the Jewish religion and going to synagogue in my senior year was a big part of college. And actually, funny enough, you'd think all of those things are different, right? Psychology, biology, journalism, and religion. And yet, 20 years later, when I encountered hypnosis, I've combined all those interests into this one area. As a counselor, I'm doing medicine, I'm doing psychology, I'm writing about it, as you well know, Mac, and there's a lot of spirituality in it for me, as you well know as well. We're going to be publishing a blog soon about the spiritual aspects of rapport with patients. Very interesting. So, but I didn't know it at the time, and so again, I want to emphasize that you should take a broad education because you never know how it's going to fall into place. But in terms of life balance, so, you know, I spend more time in the newspaper than on classes in college, and that's where my fondest memories come from. So once I entered the field of medicine, the areas I was interested in were, I was into volleyball, and I was still into journalism and the newspaper and then medical school. And then as a pulmonary fellow, so I became a pediatrician and I went to pulmonology, I started teaching bar mitzvah students. I'm from Israel and I like Hebrew and I was able to, and I like kids, so I was able to combine those interests by teaching bar mitzvah students. And Mac, you also know that to this day I still have bar mitzvah students.
Yeah.
That that helped balance my life. So that was sort of triad. And then I met my wife, I had children, so the balance, and I dropped volleyball. There was no more time for that, but the balance was family, work life, and synagogue life. Those are the three areas. And today, my balance is my work life and writing and synagogue and still family. So that's how I've maintained balance.
How do you figure out what to drop? Because, I mean, we've all had to drop certain hobbies based on our time interests. But how is it for you that you decide, oh, volleyball is something I should drop instead of, like, writing?
Well, to me, it's a matter of priority. And that everybody will have different priorities. So my priority is to help people. And so the choices that I make involve that, is this going to help more people than most people? So, for example, so volleyball was more for me.
Yeah.
And, like, writing a book is for people who are going to read it. I don't particularly value vacations or music because that's more for me. So if I really appreciate a musical piece or appreciate a beautiful mountain, that's a nice experience for me. But I've for years been oriented, does it help others? If I was going to take a beautiful photograph and share it with a lot of people, that would be okay. But if I was just going to take it for my own pleasure, to me that's less priority. And everybody has, I think, would have a different answer to that. So I dropped volleyball because it was not helping a lot of people, although, as I've discussed on the show before, I have chosen not to have a car here, and I typically walk to work because I recognize that exercise is key to maintaining a good, healthy life.
Yeah, and I think, so with that last point, this is something that I tell people all the time when they're beginning college, is work to make your life easier and converge your topics of interest and really focus on something. So what I usually tell specifically is you'll have many papers throughout many different classes, and if you all gear those papers towards one general topic, which is your topic of interest, mine was neuroscience, I would always connect every topic, whether it's political science or economics or psychology or biology, I was just connecting it back to our brain. And in doing so, by the end of my college years, I had this huge I had a bunch of sources, basically, that I could use and pick from. And it was like a mini thesis, almost, if you will. So I think it's important to make your life easier by specializing in something and going forward with that as your main focus. So, yeah, converging topics for you was about converging it to be around helping people. And so pick something and do everything with that lens. And then you'll be specialized, and you'll be unique, and you'll have a much better opportunity at just standing out later on.
So as we're talking, I'm thinking that I always wrote, and when I had difficult moments in my life, the kind of therapy I did for myself was write about it. And to this day, that's true. But then I often published what I wrote. So again, it was supposed to help others. It meant more to me. So I did write for myself. I remember in my third year as a medical student, I encountered death firsthand for the first time in my life. And three people died that I knew, some of them really closely. And I wrote about it. And I felt better after writing it, but then I submitted to the Chicago Tribune, and it was published as an editorial or commentary newspaper, and then I submitted it for publication in The New Physician, which is a medical student publication. So it made publishing it made it seem more meaningful to me because it wasn't just about me. It was hopefully helping others. Actually, republished it again on Psychology Today last year, the same essay, which is still pretty good. It's called Lessons from a Death, and I think I could still learn from it even now, 40 years later. that's interesting. Well, we're coming up against the clock again. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anwar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anwar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anwar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anwar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anwar. My special co-host, Mac Lancaster. Hope this is interesting to you, Mac. What's your next question?
This is fascinating to me. So one way that I wanted to wrap up this talk was, you're a very spiritual guy. I'm a very spiritual guy. We often are talking about spirituality and just philosophy on life. And how has your approach to life and your spiritual outlook changed from the beginning of your career to now?
That's a big question.
It is a big question.
Well, first of all, I think as we grow, as we mature, as we have life experiences, our spiritual nature, our spiritual understanding evolves. And I think that's really important to understand. When I was entered college, I felt I did not have a lot of spiritual feeling, but something was missing. And I really was enamored with my evangelical Christian friends who seemed to know their role in the world.
Yeah.
And some of them recruited me to become Christian, which is a whole other story. They did not, but when they recruited me, when they evangelized, which like today people would find offensive, I didn't find offensive, I still don't. I think this is their religious belief that they need to make people aware of God. But that made me look into my own religion, Judaism, yeah. And ask, like, does Judaism have answers to questions like, what is the world about? What is our role in the world? You know, what are we supposed to do with our lives? And Judaism has answers to that. And, in fact, a lot of Christian answers were born in Judaism, so it's one of the same answers, as it turns out. So I mentioned earlier I'd become involved in religion in my senior year of college, and I learned more about Judaism over the succeeding years. And over time, my spirituality grew beyond what Judaism teaches. There's actually many for this different branches of Judaism. So Judaism can teach you different things depending who you listen to. But even beyond that, and I started learning from my patients, especially when I got into the hypnosis world and started talking to subconsciouses about spiritual matters. And I was told a lot of fascinating things, including the idea of reincarnation, which I hear over and over again from my patients, or that I've known patients before in previous lives, because, you know, Buddhists believe that souls reincarnate and travel together in groups through different lives, and I have a sense that this is indeed the case, at least some of the time. So over the years, I have become more and more convinced that there is something beyond this life. I remember as a 20-something thinking about how God would want everybody to act in a godlike fashion without the need for God to exist. I remember thinking that kind of thought. And now I think, I'm not even sure, I think there's some force out there, but I don't think there's like a man in a, or a humanoid figure in a throne making rules, something like that. Yeah. I think of God as being more an amalgamation of all of us, that we're all part of God. That when we live and we appreciate the world, God appreciates the world through us. That's sort of evolution of my spirituality in a really quick run through from thinking of from having no spiritual sense to having an idea there's some God out there to really bringing God into each of us.
Yeah, that last point that you mentioned is really making me think, because I think, I mean, just there's so much life on this planet that there has to be another force that arises from all of our collective, I don't know, spirits, if you will. And I'm not just talking about even humans. Like, I think it gives rise to nature, too. And that all kind of coalesces into one. But I think that's, I've never really heard that specific perspective on God, but I think I can really resonate with that. That's nice.
One of my patients is able to talk to horses through hypnosis, and he's asked them about their spiritual life. And according to him, the horses have told him their spiritual life is about being grateful, except if they've been abused, in which case they keep asking why.
Yeah.
And I think that's overlaps with human, you know, we are a lot grateful. He also told me all horse spirits used to be human. So, something to think about.
Well, so, what do we need to take away from this discussion in terms of spiritual growth, but also what we should be doing to prepare ourselves from a young age for a job and career?
Well, I think of career as part of how you want to live your life. And ideally, the career should be, in my mind, a reflection of your spiritual belief or your what the meaning of your life is. And I know as teenagers are listening to this, they don't know the meaning yet. They're trying to figure it out. But keep working at figuring out what you're about, what makes you tick, what do you resonate with. In my case, I resonate with helping people. But if you resonate about creativity, then think about how can you use your creativity through your career. So to me, an ideal career is one that blends your spiritual beliefs with what you do day to day. You've heard the phrase, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I know that's ideal. I'm fortunate to have that, but not everybody does, but it's a good goal to have. And mind you, again, if you're a young person listening to this, your first job is unlikely to contain that. The first job is just part of your training. Now, my first job is, even as a pediatric resident, you know, just doing the IVs and stuff like that, that wasn't quite as spiritual as what I'm doing today, but in time I'm moving towards that. So I think always keep an open mind, be flexible. Things will arise in your path, in your life journey that you didn't expect. And just because you didn't expect them doesn't mean they're not good. Sometimes they can be very good. And so check them out as doors open. That doesn't mean you follow every door, but consider it. And when you face obstacles, advocate for yourself, and find ways. Sometimes you deal with obstacles by finding another door. Sometimes you deal with obstacles by embracing them and learning through dealing better with them. My very first job I took was doing research, and I found out pretty quickly I didn't like doing research. I like working with people. I didn't know that at the time until I did the research. So until I did the research job I didn't realize I didn't like it. So it's okay to get into a job that you don't like, then you just switch. One thing I would recommend is don't stay at a job you don't like for a long time. I would say that. So find the right path and follow it.
Yeah, and I really want to emphasize to that point that your first job is not, it might not be great at all, but it's definitely not going to be what you're going to do for the long term. So keep that in mind, that it's just part of your journey. If it's terrible, you get some funny stories out of it, you get some life wisdom. If it's great, then, you know, maybe that's the direction that you should go. If you work in a restaurant and you're impassioned by it, then maybe you should be a head chef. Maybe you should be a restaurant owner. But if you hate it, then you know that that's not for you, and you know it's just to make a couple bucks while you're growing up and to grow your experience. So, yeah, I really want to emphasize that point, too, because I hear a lot of teenagers fall into this trap of not wanting to do any job until it's the perfect one. But there is no perfect first job. Any first job is actually perfect just by you doing it, because it will be a branching point.
Exactly right. So, Mac, thank you so much for co-hosting, asking me provocative questions. And,
thank you for having me. This was really fun. I'm glad I could interview you.
Thank you. We'll be back next week. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.